Welcome to Cannabis Health Radio, a podcast where we share stories from people around the world who are using cannabis as medicine. The information is meant to raise awareness about the health benefits of cannabis, but should not be taken as medical advice. Now, here are your hosts, Ian Jessup and Corey Yelland.
Welcome to another episode of Cannabis Health Radio. I'm Ian Jessup.
And I'm Corey Yelland.
Before we get started, I want to read a comment we got on our website. It says, "Thank you once again for a wonderful program. I feel this truly is a divine gift, having this podcast being broadcast to all of us. I get teary-eyed after every episode, listening to others trying to eradicate cancer while trying to maintain their place on Earth. Love to everyone listening and involved with this amazing podcast." And that's from Terrence. And we thank you, Terrence. It's very kind of you. Wasn't that nice, Corey?
Very.
Now, imagine this. You're in your late 30s. You have two young kids. Your wife is pregnant, expecting a third. You go to the doctor and you're told you have inoperable colon cancer and you've got 12 to 18 months to live. Well, that's what happened to our guest today, Scott Davis from the UK. He had that episode about a number of years ago. We'll ask him about that. And today, Scott is now cancer-free. Scott, how many years ago were you given that fateful diagnosis?
It was almost 5 years ago now. It's September 2018. The 6 months prior to that was when I started having the issues back and forth with stomach aches and stuff like that. But after 6 months of misdiagnosis, they finally diagnosed me. And it was something I wasn't expecting, the diagnosis that I got. And unfortunately, being inoperable, they only had palliative chemo that they could offer me. So it kind of come down to having to look for anything, any other options at the time. And luckily for me, I think the whole cannabis thing was just sort of on the online and that, and it was something that was kind of in the background straight away. So it was something that I looked into immediately, and that was 5 years ago. And luckily, so far so good, I'm still in remission. In the UK, you have to be in remission for 5 years before they can officially class you as cancer-free. But from the scans that they're taking at the minute, there's no inoperable tumour and there doesn't seem to be any active cancer anywhere.
Now, leading up to the diagnosis, you were suffering from stomach cramps, fatigue, and doctors initially thought you had pancreatitis, right?
Yeah, initially it was IBS, irritable bowel syndrome, and I needed to tweak my diet, and then it might have been pancreatitis and stuff like that. So we were trying to work out things, and that's what started making me look at diet and stuff initially, was, well, what can I do to ease my suffering at the minute and what's going to benefit me? Although everything seemed to sort of have a small effect, everything come back round to sort of levelling out and being painful again and that. So small dietary changes did have an effect at one point, which led us to believe, well, it must be irritable bowel syndrome or pancreatitis. But once you start recovering a little bit, you go downhill pretty quick again. So, it was unfortunate that it took so long for them to actually basically take me serious enough to actually investigate a little bit further.
Scott, I'm just going to say, when the doctors diagnosed you, why did they say your colon cancer was inoperable?
It was wrapped around, I had a tumour that was pushing on my pancreas and my liver, and it had tailed off and it had wrapped around my bowel arteries and was woven within the blood vessels of the colon, but on the outside of the colon. So they weren't willing to operate. Which kind of left me in a position where, I mean, at one point, the good news was they'd given me the 12 to 18 months, but because my wife was pregnant at the time, and they knew she was due to have the baby within 3 months, they were kind of honest enough to sort of say, with the way that my health was going and the way I was just deteriorating, they didn't think it would be any more than sort of 3 to 4 months. So they kind of was in a position where they were just trying to get me to a point where I could get home after spending about 3 months in hospital. And that when I got, I'd started doing the alternative route in hospital because there didn't seem any point in wasting time. But it was when I got home that I could really focus on it, the cannabis side of things and stuff as well, and the diet and vitamins and everything else that I started adding into what I was doing. And slowly and surely, months and months down the line, I seemed to not deteriorate and just level out, and then started creeping up and getting better and better, which I think surprised, obviously, the oncology team that was dealing with me, and obviously surprised us all considering the diagnosis that we got in the first place.
What went through your mind when you were given that diagnosis?
Do you know what? It's a weird feeling. I didn't panic and I didn't get upset. And I mean, it even says in my notes on that day that they give me the diagnosis that I didn't get upset. I didn't cry. I went out the room for sort of 20 minutes just to collect my thoughts and then come back in with some questions that I had. And although they're very dismissive of the alternative route, that was the first time that I brought it up. And my dad was with me in the room at the time with his wife. And we mentioned, well, there must be something. What about alternative routes? What about cannabis and that? And my oncologist was incredible, to be honest with her, because I know how dismissive a lot of oncologists are. But given the position, she said, look, at this stage, I don't think anything you do is going to make it the situation worse. So if you feel like it's helping, then go with it. If you feel like it's not, then stop. And I really appreciate that, because a lot of people I've spoken to, they've not got much option, but the problem is their oncologists dismiss it as a bad idea or as it won't work. But with the lack of education and that from that side of things, I don't really see how they can give an opinion unless they actually know full well. So I was grateful for my oncologist for her giving me her general opinion and sort of, in a sense, sort of allow me to get on with that. And I could be honest and open with her. And throughout the whole time, I was honest with what I was doing, with what I was taking. And it even got to the point where I think even they thought, well, this seems to be working for him. And they're at the meetings we used to have, they used to say, whatever you're doing, just keep doing it, because it seems to be having a positive effect. And then that's how it went. And it took 17 months from that initial diagnosis to finally get to the point where the tumour was not showing any active cancer. And then incredibly 3 months on, which was 20 months from the diagnosis, I did a PET scan lo and behold, the inoperable tumour had disappeared by that point.
That's amazing.
I've been kind of living on cloud nine ever since then, but being aware of what I eat and what I take and then obviously appreciating every single day.
Scott, what was your diet like prior to your diagnosis?
Well, I mean, this is a thing. I used to be in the Navy. I was in the Navy for 5 years. So you can imagine being young, 18 to 23, you're traveling the world, you're drinking a lot with your friends, and it's an incredible time of your life. But diet-wise and that, you're not really thinking about that. You're enjoying life. Mm-hmm. And then when I left the Navy, I become a builder. I trained to be a builder. And of course, that in itself is kind of, you're rushing around, you're not sort of eating very well. For me personally, I ran a building company for 16 years, and the stress that comes with that and the convenience food. And I think that whole combination of things, and then being one of those people that thinks you've had a hard day and you deserve a beer, it becomes a daily routine. And then it's only then when I sort of look back after the diagnosis, I realise every single day I was probably doing something that was negative and having a negative impact on me. And that with the stress of running a company and stuff, and just, you know, I feel like I burnt the candle at both ends for a long period of time. So it all sort of come to a head when I was 38, really. But the whole situation has definitely opened my eyes up to sort of what is potentially within our grasp of healing ourselves, and what we can potentially do to sort of prevent and heal from cancer.
Scott, when you were diagnosed, you underwent chemotherapy. How many chemo sessions did you have?
I was offered 6 palliative chemo sessions. And the idea was because of the tumour was so big at the time, the chemotherapy shrinks your organs. So the idea was it was going to shrink my organs to give me that bit of end of life, sort of quality of life in a sense, rather than being continuously in pain. And I was on a lot of morphine and tramadol. And we did the 6 palliative chemo sessions, and the combination, because I'd started doing the cannabis, the THC, the CBD and diet, vitamin D and all that. And after the first 6 sessions, the tumour had shrunk by 50%, which they weren't expecting. So I was offered another 6 sessions. Unfortunately, after that 6 sessions, it didn't do anything. And that's when they had a PET scan and delved into what was going on with this tumour. And that's when they found that it was woven around more vessels and it was all linked in. So although it had shrunk by 50%, which was incredible, it was kind of bittersweet because it meant there was no shift in it now, and that was the last they could do. So I continued on the alternative route. And like I say, I think the palliative chemo finished in the March 2019, and it wasn't until the following February, March time the following year that I've finally reached a point where the tumour was showing no active cancer.
How did you feel after your chemo treatments?
Terrible. It strips everything out of you, I think. I mean, at the time, I wanted to throw everything at it. I mean, I was begging for any trial or operation or anything. And from everything that I'd read, to be honest with you, I know a lot of people sort of pick one or the other. But a lot of what I was reading, you know, the chemotherapy has got its benefits to a point. And I think as long as you're trying to do something alternative to boost your immune system and try and keep yourself in tip top as you can, then you're kind of counterbalancing it out in a sense. That was what my mindset was if I was going to do it, I was going to throw everything at it. And then at least then, if it didn't go the way I wanted it to, I could kind of leave with no regret and feel like that I genuinely tried everything and I give it everything. And I feel like I did that, and I definitely feel like it's paid off.
How much oil were you taking a day, and was it multi-strain? Did you dose it orally, rectally, a bit of both?
I had, I took suppositories, THC suppositories, and I was putting THC into capsules. I was putting CBD into capsules, and then I had a time where I'd take it, because being in the Navy, you do a lot of watch keeping and stuff. So I come up with a list of what I wanted to do, and I used to take it at 8 in the morning, and then again at 12 o'clock, then 4 o'clock, then 8 o'clock again. And I'd do that routinely, and I'd have the routine with the vitamins and the milk thistle and everything else, where I'd be taking that at a certain time every single day. And I stuck to that routine for a good, 17 months solid. And it was only once I reached remission that I decided to sort of tweak it and change it slightly, because I didn't feel I needed to be taking as much THC, because although I've built my tolerance up to it, it is something that obviously day to day, taking that amount of gram a day in a sense at one point, it's trying to find that happy balance with living a life and being able to do the school runs and everything without being away with the fairies constantly.
Were you a cannabis user prior to this incident?
No, I mean, I think everyone tries it when they're younger, in their youth and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I tried it, and it was not something that really appealed to me. And then joining the Navy at such a young age, obviously they've got their own drug rules, and it wasn't worth any risk for me to try anything like that in between that period of time. So it wasn't something that's really been on my radar until I was sort of 38 and become aware of the medical benefits is it, as opposed to just the social benefits of it, in a sense.
It's interesting that you you took your health into your own hands. And when I was reading your story and doing a bit of research on your story, I found a great quote by Hippocrates, the father of medicine, who says, "If you are not your own doctor, you are a fool."
Mm.
And I think you are your own doctor, and you defied conventional medical dogma, saying that you'd be dead within months.
I mean, yeah.
They told you 12 to 18, but as you said, your oncologist said it's just a matter of a few months before you're gone. And here you are today, almost 5 years later, you're cancer-free because of what you did yourself, not what the doctors did for you, but what you did yourself. I think that is truly remarkable. Both you and Corey are truly remarkable because you, I mean, Corey's into year 11 now, I think, Corey, right?
Yeah, year 11.
Year 11 being cancer-free after being given only months to live.
Yeah.
And you're almost at year 5. And my bet is that you will see your grandchildren.
Yeah, you look amazing, Scott. You're in great shape there.
Well, do you know what? I think the thing is, it's stories like Corey's that were passed on to me. And other people, there was an incredible lady called Joy Smith, and her story was passed on to me as well. So it's a collection of those stories that actually give me the hope and the inspiration and the encouragement to believe that, you know, this is possible. This is something. And I think that's one of the biggest things that anyone can take away, is the fact that the alternative, it might not work for everyone. But what a thing to believe that you're fighting to live as opposed to accepting to die. And I thought that's the effect that stories like Corey's have on people is the fact that, you know, surely that's more beneficial for anyone, is to want to feel like they're fighting to live than just accepting, you know, to die, in a sense.
Scott, when I was looking at your profile, did you have some health issues earlier this year?
I had some chest pains and stuff. I've been in and out of hospital with a few chest pains, but they can't seem to find the cause of that. I mean, there's a suggestion that it might be to do with the palliative chemo and the amount of weight that I lost and that. And now I've kind of gone back from, you know, at one point I went down to about sort of 62 kilograms and I'm back up to a healthy 85 now. And I think the drop in weight and then going back up again, I think it obviously has a big effect on your body and your chest and all your organs and stuff like that. So I try and keep as fit and healthy as I possibly can and eat fit and healthy as well. And it's been a while now since I've had any of those chest pains. So I think the further I get away from any of the conventional, I feel like it's either been detoxed out now or, you know, the body's found a nice, happy level at the minute.
When you talk about your weight, it reminds me, Corey, of the interview we did with Miles Critchley, who lost half his body weight.
Mm-hmm.
And he had cancer, and he's cancer-free. And he now eats one meal a day, and he's extremely healthy. And I think your mental attitude and the change of diet, and as you said earlier, believing in your own mind that you want to live as opposed to being afraid to die, I think that is really, really important for a lot of people to understand.
Yeah.
And congratulations to you.
Thank you.
Scott, can you discuss a little bit with the supplements you took when you were fighting this as well, because there's often an interest from people on that?
Yeah. I mean, obviously the cannabis and the CBD was something that I was taking 4 times a day, but I was also taking milk thistle, vitamin D, curcumin, what else? Vitamin C, vitamin B12, omega-3, vitamin E, half an aspirin, and then obviously one of the kickers, after about 12 months of kind of remaining stable and stuff, I added in a drug called fenbendazole, which comes from a dog worming tablet, Panacure.
Mm-hmm.
And I added that one in because there's sort of science that the studies and that show that it can block glucose pathways and it can change cancer cell mutations. So I thought, well, if I'm doing well at the minute, and if that's something else that can just tip things in the balance for my in my favour, then it's worthwhile doing. And obviously, a lot of studies show that sugar is the main feeder of cancers. So if the fenbendazole can block glucose pathways the whole time whilst I'm trying to reduce the amount of processed sugars I'm having as well, I felt that that could only be beneficial. And yeah, I think the combination of all of that definitely sort of was the winning formula for me, to be honest with you.
Thank you.
Corey, give us your comment on sugar. What do you call sugar?
I say every time that you ingest sugar, it's like pouring Miracle-Gro on your cancer cells.
Mm.
That's right. That's a great comment.
How much cannabis are you taking a day now, Scott, as a maintenance dose?
I take 1 to 2 drops of THC, which has been mixed with either olive oil or coconut oil, or to be honest with you, I sometimes mix it with the CBD because I take the CBD anyway. Mm-hmm. So I kind of mix the two and take CBD in the morning and at night still. It's just one of, and because it's not been researched in the UK and it's not legal, it's difficult to sort of judge what the recommendation should be. And obviously everyone's cancer is different, everybody's makeup's different, so it's a real anxious juggling act in a sense to make sure I feel like I'm doing enough to be on the right side of remaining healthy and remaining in remission, but also not wanting it to take over continuously where I'm focused on that all the time, like I was for the first sort of 3 years. Even after I reached remission, it was very much routine. So it's just trying to take the foot off the gas and enjoy life without feeling like I'm constantly doing something and fighting cancer. But I think that slowly comes over time. I mean, I'm sure you're the same, Corey. Now you're kind of further down the line. It must be less of an anxious thing for you than it was in the first few years.
Yeah, but I'm still very aware. Very aware of it. Yeah. Scott, what was your daughter's reaction to what you've accomplished? Or did they say anything? Or?
Well, I mean, to be honest with you, I kind of started the Facebook page just to let my friends know and to let them know, be aware of my position and the situation I was in, and, you know, to try and sort of make a bit of awareness and make sure no one else found themselves in that position. And also the important thing was for me to share with people that, you know, life insurance, I mean, that's been incredibly important to me. It wasn't something that I was hoping would be paid out because it was only a critical life insurance if you get 12 months or less. But that was enough for me to sort of be able to focus on myself and my family as opposed to have to worry about bills and that. So that was incredibly important as well. I mean, I put that on par with the alternatives because that eradicated so much stress and worry about how am I going to pay bills? How am I going to, you know, enjoy the last months or few months of my life with, you know, financial worries. I feel like that was something that definitely helped me. And it put me in a position where I was free to sort of be able to share my experience with other people and that and focus on the blog and that and try and do what I could do to sort of share the story in a positive way to help other people and give them that encouragement and that inspiration to think that there is, you know, it's not just pharmaceutical that can heal cancer. We've got a lot more power than we give ourselves credit for.
Absolutely. Corey, here's a guy who was given months to live, and in September he plans to climb Mount Kilimanjaro in Tanzania, which is 19,000 feet. Unbelievable.
Wow.
What are you doing to get in shape for that?
Well, I've been running quite a lot. I've done quite a few half marathons for charities and stuff and raised money for charities. And it's also for a personal reason, just to prove to myself that I'm fit and healthy now. And I'm going to be 44 in September. And I thought what an achievement it would be if I can climb Kilimanjaro and peak. And that would basically be 5 years on from the day that I got diagnosed. So yeah, it should be an achievement, and I want to start my own charity up, and this is the kickstart of it all, to sort of get local companies to sort of sponsor and that, and yeah, and then moving forward, I'd like to do more challenges, just to sort of encourage other people and show people that you can go from, you know, death's door in a sense to almost top of the world. And you know that you can achieve anything if you believe in yourself and you really go for it.
Good for you. Fantastic. Yeah. Scott, how do you view life now compared to prior to your cancer diagnosis?
I think the biggest thing for me is realizing that the materialistic stuff in life is irrelevant. It's not important. You know, I used to work so hard at trying to give my children the best of everything, the best house we could have, the nicest cars, the best toys and stuff like that. And then really all I realize is they don't want any of that. They just wanted my time. So I spend a lot more time doing things that are the simplest thing, doing the school runs or just taking them swimming and going surfing with my kids and playing football in the garden with them, and just the simplest of things, which give us all the greatest of pleasures, to be honest with you. And I think after everything we've all been through as a family, it's definitely gelled us together a lot more solid than I think it would have been if it never have happened. So in a weird way, cancer's sort of not ripped us apart, but brought us together. And yeah, moving forward, it's definitely made us all appreciate life and just how fragile it can be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you feel the same way, Corey?
Oh, yeah.
Life is the appreciation of life generally, as opposed to material things in life, is much more important. Family, relationships, things like that.
Yeah, I do. And also, I don't know about you, Scott, but particularly for a while there, it would just bug me when people would get wigged out about this, from my perception, were the stupidest little things. And it's like, oh my God, why are you spending all this energy freaking out over something so
inconsequential?
Yeah, inconsequential. Yeah. Oh my God, just move forward, enjoy your life. Like, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. You realize.
Focus your energy on more positive things, I feel.
That's exactly what's happened, I feel. I feel like I've found a direction now, mm-hmm. focusing the energy that I've got and the drive and determination that used to make me work so hard. I've found that I've still got that, but I can put it in a much more positive direction in mm-hmm. using that to, you know, accomplish different things that will either encourage other people or help other people. So yeah, I'm really pleased, in a sense that, not pleased that it happened, but I with the outcome and the outlook I've got on life now is completely different to what I would have imagined it to have been, to be honest with you. So yeah.
Scott, what has been the toughest part of this journey that you've been through the last 5 years?
I think physically I was in a position where I couldn't really stand and have a shower on my own. So the mental impact that has on you, I think that's still there. I mean, I still sometimes look at myself in the mirror and catch a glimpse of me, and I feel you get a reflection that you're still poorly. And I think that's probably my driving determination regarding fitness and trying to be as fit as I can, is to prove to myself that I'm as far detached from what I was when I was in hospital, where I couldn't shower, I couldn't really stand up, couldn't do anything. So yeah, but mentally, I think it's an ongoing thing, to be honest with you. It's definitely eased a lot to what it was, and I don't have the panic attacks and the worry anymore. Like, it's, you know, you feel like today's your last day, but then in a sense that's quite it's a weird privilege to have, in a sense, because it does make you appreciate every day when you do feel like today could be your last at some point. So I take that with me, the fact that, you know, we never know what's around the corner. And like so many people used to say to me, which I used to find frustrating, is, well, you know, I could go and get hit by a bus tomorrow, which I know people were trying to say it in a nice way, because, you know, you're sat there with cancer and they're right, they could walk out the hospital after visiting you and get hit by a bus. But yeah, it's one of those comments that you kind of feel like, well, I suppose that is true, but don't play in bus lanes.
Yeah.
No, that's right.
One of these, Scott, is not like the other.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
There's not much of a comparison, is there?
No.
Yeah. And I think when you get hit by a bus, you don't know about it. Whereas cancer, you're sat there, you're aware the bus is coming and there's nothing you can do.
Yeah.
Scott, how has this journey been for your wife?
I think it's been tough, to be honest with you. I think one minute you feel like you're losing your husband, and you're going to be a widow and you've got to bring up the kids and, you know, have all these anxieties and worries about that. And then the next minute, you know, things seem to be going fine and that. And I know she probably still worries and that when I have had the chest pains and when I don't feel great, your initial thought is straight away, oh God, is it something serious? You know, I'm not as anxious about it now as I used to be. And I know everyone gets it, tweaks and pains and twinges here and there. And I'm not associating it as now like I used to, straight away to the cancer side of things. Whereas I know it's been hard for my wife in a sense that she's had to go through it from an outside point of view. I can only assume it must be incredibly hard for someone to sit there and not know how to help you or how to do it. And it is basically down to you, the person with the cancer, to try and do it. And they've just got to, unfortunately, go along for the ride, whether that's all the highs and the lows. It's definitely been a struggle for us both. But I feel like it's, you know, I've been with my wife since I was sort of 20 years old and she was 18, and I'm sort of 44 now and she's going to be 42. So we've been through a lot together as it is. And I think after we've got through this, I don't think there should be anything that we can't face together now, hopefully.
No, very well said. Scott, congratulations. And it was wonderful of you to tell your story again. And we wish you all the best in September when you climb Mount Kilimanjaro. Thank you.
Yeah, let us know how you do.
I will do. Yeah. I'll have to give you a call from up there and see if we can get a signal going.
Yeah, that's right. Before we go, I want to let our listeners know that you can help us spread the word about the amazing, often life-saving health benefits of cannabis just by sharing the podcast, writing a review, or rating us. We very much appreciate the help of everyone who's done that already, and we really like the 5-star ratings. We'd also like to thank those of you who support the show by making a one-time donation or a monthly donation on our Patreon page, which you can do for as little as $5 a month. It helps to keep us running. You'll find out how to do that on our website, cannabishealthradio.com. Thank you for your support. It means so much to us. And we'll be back again next week with another episode of Cannabis Health Radio.
Thanks for listening to Cannabis Health Radio. For more information and to search previous podcasts, visit our website, cannabishealthradio.com. Subscribe so you don't miss new episodes. And follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. This podcast is made possible by donations from our listeners. If you found the information helpful, please consider making a donation in any amount through our website. You can also help us share our message by leaving a review on your podcast listening platform. We are very grateful for your support. Thank you. Thanks for listening to today's show. To check out more great cannabis podcasts, go to podconnects.com. Here's a preview of one of our other shows.
99.9% of our DNA is identical. It's a 0.1% that truly makes us different and unique. And that's what the show is about. Find out that 0.1% about your favorite guests. Find out what music they like, their first cannabis experience, and even what their room looked like growing up. But more importantly, or as important, their journey. Learn what makes them unique on Everything Is Personal.